Welcome back, everyone, and this is Discerning Consciousness. Here again with Ant-Man and Steve. It's good to be back.
It is indeed.
And today this is all about neopolitics, and it's episode 17. So just to give you all a brief introduction, what we're talking about today is the fact that, as we are all aware, systems of politics around the world are in a state of utter crisis. And no one believes in politics or politicians anymore. So we're going to discuss what's wrong with the system. And then we'll move towards, in the second part, after a bit of a break, we will discuss what we mean by neopolitics or new politics.
Yeah, if you will. New politics is, I think the official one is neopolitics, but new politics is an easy way.
It's an easier word for people to recognise. So first of all, we'll start off with basically a quick description of how we perceive democracy to be a lie or a sham, essentially. So for a few hundred years now, when we transitioned from the rule of kings to the idea of democracy and political rule, we've been hoodwinked and into believing that we live under a system of freedom and fair governance. But the reality, as of course we are all aware, is we are existing in a corporatocracy.
Yeah. And really all we've got is we've replaced the kings with corporations.
Yes, yes, exactly. So essentially corporations run the world, but politics and democracy is there as a veneer, if you will, of respectability.
Yeah.
So we're sort of led to believe that, you know, we elect these people and they make honourable decisions on our behalf. And
they represent us.
They represent us, and it is a true and fair system. And part of the reason why politics is in crisis is because more and more people are coming to an awareness that this just isn't the case, that the illusion, if you will, is, you know, is finally becoming clear for all to see.
I think even with the slightly skewed press that we all seem to get, the individualised for each country press that you get, yeah. I think it's very clear to see that all of the politics in most of the countries around the world, there's very few that you'd say aren't like it.
Yeah,
it's all it's a popularity contest.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so it's not actually about you know, the honourable characteristics of these politicians that we elect. Essentially, as you say, Steve, it is all about personality.
And sound bites.
And sound bites.
How good do you look? How good do you sound?
Yes, absolutely. So just another feature of the system is that it's a predatory system that we live under. So as we know, we're preyed upon in terms of things like taxation and the monetary system. And in a way, democracy as we know it in the Western world and here primarily in the UK, well, that's a perfect system to embody that.
Yeah, we can't really be taxed much more than we are. And really, if you look at the taxation system, the purpose of it is to try and tax people to the point where they have to go out to work. They have to work for what ends up being, whichever way you cut it, whether it's a smaller job that eventually feeds up to the bigger corporations. So you're effectively always enslaved into that system. And the politics just gives you that belief that you've got some control.
Yeah, every 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Yes, I can make a difference.
Which, as we reiterate again, now is looking more ridiculous, like at no time in history. And, you know, the powers that be, I think they're aware of this growing movement online of people coming to the truth. And I think they are concerned.
I mean, if you were to think back to the original foundations of the Labour Party, that was driven by the unions, and it was effectively the political wing of the unions. If you look at where it is now, it's somewhere around 50% of its funding is via the unions. So they hold less and less sway with it, which is why there's the turmoil in it now, because you still have the older, I guess the older style left-wing supporters within the Labour Party that want to make the social change, but you've actually not got all of that power because the unions can't exercise that power because they don't have the whole vote.
Yeah. I mean, talking of more historical perspective, it's interesting to consider that once upon a time, you know, key feature of British politics is this idea of a left-right paradigm, which really has become clear is an illusion. Whereas back in the day, you know, up until the sort of the 70s and 80s, before Blairism came along, there did seem to be a real difference between parties, and there was coherency about this idea of a left-right paradigm. But even back then, I think it was fake. But now people can see it more clearly than ever. It's just a ridiculous
idea. I think there was probably more of a, a veneer, a much thicker veneer back then. Mm. So everything was a different colour, quite literally. If you voted for one party or if you voted for another, they were driving down completely different roads to some degree. I think still we're heading to the same destination point.
Yeah, it was more, in a sense, for the viewing public, it did have some sort of legitimacy, and it did seem to be, well, have veracity, if you like. Whereas now, as we can see over in the States with the upcoming election between Clinton and Trump, it is just absolutely absurd. Even, you know, mainstream journalists in networks like Fox and CNN are almost disgusted at the level of debate and how it is really discrediting even mainstream journalism. Yeah. They're looking on it aghast and thinking, this isn't real, is it?
And if they're looking upon it aghast, imagine what we're doing.
Exactly.
So, but again, you know, with that, how much is there real political choice in the US?
Mm.
Because has there been a massive difference between the different presidents that they've had?
Mm.
And actually, is where they are where we're going to? Because they've always been a popularity contest.
Mm.
And we're now there ourselves. That's what we're really talking about, is how popular is the leader?
Mm.
It's not really even down to what policies does that party actually follow. Mm. How popular is the leader?
Because that was a key difference, wasn't it? It was the strength of the parliamentary, say, Conservative or Labour Party, and the members.
I mean, John Major was never the most charismatic of people.
No.
So even back then, and we're not talking that many years ago, he still managed to get elected.
Mm.
And yet, you look at it now, and I don't think they'd look to put somebody like that up.
Mm.
Because they just they don't have that level of charisma.
No, I mean, the marketeers and the spin meisters, they would struggle, wouldn't they, in the modern era with...
I mean, Blair's the perfect example of how somebody with little substance but massive spin can get into Parliament.
Yeah, and of course being a psychopath helps. I'll just talk a bit now, Steve, about some of the features of the British democratic system. And as we know, it's very much based on an adversarial system. In other words, there's no allowance for building a consensus. So it's all about winning a political debate, which in essence is a case of ego defence, which is, i.e., defending your position. And it's not possible to win a debate.
It's one of those unlikely situations, because it is always going to be a... whether I believe my side is right or not, I'm still going to argue I'm right.
Yeah.
And again, most of the people that are in the Commons, that are taking part in these debates, that's the educational system they've come up through.
Yeah.
Sure. They've done a political science degree.
Yeah.
And they will have done debating within there.
Sure.
And they will have had to have debated things that they firmly did not believe in, but they've become skilled at debating.
Mm.
So that's what they do. And whether it's a something that they would actually want to agree with, effectively, then they're almost forced not to agree with it and to debate the other side.
So what it is, what we get is like this all or nothing system, and what that means is many of the intractable problems to do with, say, the NHS or, you know, education. They never seem to find, then there's never a resolution or policies that actually help, because it just can't come about through the existing political system.
Yeah, and it's very, very rare that they have a free vote.
Mm.
Those are probably the only times when you're more likely to get some sort of genuine, real democratic response.
Mm. Mm.
Very, very rare that they do that. And when they do that, even then, how free is that free vote?
Mm.
Because it's not going to be unknown who's voted where.
Mm. And just something else I'd like to add here in, Steve, is, you know, from the 1980s onwards, we had the move towards politics becoming more about marketing, like marketing products. Yeah. So, I mean, you think of New Labour and Tony Blair, and it's a bit like new Coke or new Pepsi. I mean,
yes, now without any added substance. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, so that was very much at odds with politics before that, whereby we were seen to be ruled, or it was said, by statesmen and women who were seen as honourable people who, you know, were drawn to politics for good reasons, because they felt like they had this, you know, calling, if you were. And in some ways, again, I think the reason why people are so disillusioned with politics now is that they see these political figures and they think, these are some of the worst types of human being in the world. Yeah. Some of the most dishonourable types of human being. And no wonder they're not interested in politics. And yet, you know, the political liberal elite based in London will say, oh, that's because they're stupid and ignorant and don't know how the world works or don't know about politics. I would argue with them and say that's not the case. Actually, most people, you know, even unconsciously aware that this system is just rotten and needs change.
I think there's a lot of people, there's people that I talk to where they don't necessarily have an answer to it. They know that they don't actually really want to vote for anyone.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, they've got to vote for someone. And it's like, well, who's the least offensive?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the one that I can vote for that is probably not going to do it as bad as the others?
Yeah, sure.
You almost want a none of the above. Mm. You almost want an Iceland where you go over and say, that's it, we've had enough. And obviously, 300,000 people, they've got a bit more of a chance to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a point in case where a country said, we don't like what you've done.
Mm.
We don't want you as our leaders anymore. Can you please go?
Mm.
And yes, there was protesting. There was some violence.
Mm.
The police tear gassed. They pepper sprayed. They did those sorts of things. But every day for 3 or 4 days, these people turn back up outside their actual their buildings, their equivalent of our House of Commons.
Yeah.
And they turned up outside there and they kept on saying, get out. Mm. And eventually the political party that was in control of it resigned.
Mm. Mm.
So we're never going to get that. We'll never have that luxury because there's too many people.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll never organise them all well enough to do that.
And also the UK is too big to fail, if you like.
Would they allow it?
Yeah.
Would they let it go?
Yeah.
That's the other big question. Would they want to let it go? Probably not.
Mm. Mm.
So, yeah.
But as just to add to this point, I mean, you're seeing the same thing in the States with the current election over there, which is due to take place next week between Clinton and Trump. And, you know, you've got a billionaire and, you know, we won't go into too many details about Hillary Clinton, but I'm sure our listeners are well aware of a lot of the allegations about the Clintons. Not the most, not the most honourable of people.
They've certainly done, well, there are reports of them having done things that are not necessarily moral or not things that you'd expect somebody of stature to do.
Mm, mm.
Not an example you'd want to follow.
No. That's certainly that's a very good way of putting it, yes.
Although, if you believe what you can see on the news, I think a subsidiary of CNN, in fact, they effectively released what the result was going to be on a website. Now,
okay,
you could argue that that's just something faked up. You could argue that actually they were just practicing and making sure that the systems worked.
And what were the stats? Because we're a week before the election.
Funny enough, so the stats were, and I'll read them just to make sure I get them right. So Hillary won by a winner with 41.7 million votes. That's 42%.
Mm.
With Trump on 40.1 million. So, yeah, she a clear winner, but not by a massive amount.
So it'd be interesting for our listeners, because this will go out after the election. So they'll go, my God, that was a complete...
If it's correct, we'll get a knock at the door. But
yeah.
But this is a subsidiary of CNN. They put it up, they took it down again, but you can still find it if you go looking in the right places. And again, you know, are we voting in a system that is actually going to correctly register our votes?
Mm.
Because how broke is the system?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that is not in doubt, I think. Right, so this has been an interesting debate. This is part one of our episode today, where we've essentially outlined the main problems with politics, and principally the system here in the UK of democracy. So we're just going to leave you now for a little bit of a musical interlude, which is a new feature of Discerning Consciousness. We hope you enjoy. And we'll be back after the break in part two to talk about how we feel that a new neo-form of politics might come about. So we'll see you on the other side.
See you later.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised.
Wash me, you've got a problem, free, yeah.
look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Hello everyone and welcome back. I hope you enjoyed our new little section there, little musical interlude, so yeah, to
give
speak.
Give it a bit of a break.
Yeah, so continuing now with episode 17, Neopolitics, and in this part two, we're going to talk about how we feel the system might change of politics and come into a more conscious way of governing, I should say.
It's the sort of thing where it could be slightly utopian. It's something that we may never actually get to, but it's what you'd like.
Yeah.
To think
so about. I suppose yeah, for our listeners, this is like an ideal point. An ideal version, if you like, of politics morphing into something more conscious. So I just begin with this fundamental point, which I believe is that we need to recognise, as individuals and as a society, that we have the personal sovereign right to be governing ourselves. And I think that's becoming abundantly clear because the people that we elect over and over just simply aren't up to the job. And that's because essentially we should be doing it. The so-called, ordinary people or the general public. And I think, through hundreds of years of conditioning and propaganda, we've been led to believe that, we don't have that right. And I believe that we do. I don't know what you think on that, Steve.
I think it's almost to the point where I think there's a lot of the general public that would probably do a damn better job than what the current people are doing. But they don't have that same drive. They don't have that need for the power. They don't have that want to be in that sort of a position. So they tend not to. So you end up with the same style or the same sort of people from whichever political party you look at. They're the same sort of people that are trying to get into positions of power because they're driven to do that. Now, there are, it's like many things. I'm sure there are people, there are members of parliament, there are councillors that are doing it for the right reason.
Yeah.
But they're not the ones that will rise to the top.
No.
Because the system wants the people that they want to say the things that they want them to say. So only those people will rise to the top. If you want to become a member of parliament for one of the main political parties in this country, you've got to have the support of that political party. And the only way you'll get the support of that political party is if you say the things that they want you to say.
So this interests you to talk about political parties because it's my belief that one way in which the system will begin to change is I believe that the party system will collapse eventually in this country. I think that is a likelihood that could well happen. We can see at the moment the constant infighting and crisis in the Labour Party and this attempt to get rid of Corbyn over and over, and only what it serves to do is make him stronger. And there are, ongoing crises in the Conservative Party. I mean, also in the Liberal Democrats, they reduced to one MP, I believe, at the last election. They elected a leader that no one has heard of. So we see that this party-based system is completely unsustainable.
And if that is the case, then if you end up with a non-party-based system, you just end up with people that are elected based on what they are saying they want to do and how they want to do it, then you're much likely, when it comes to a main vote in a House of Commons, to get a genuine moral result out of it rather than just a, like we talked about earlier, just a constant infight of yes it is, no it isn't.
Yeah, because of course, once you're a member of a political party and you're an MP, you take the whip, which essentially means, we won't go into the esoteric meaning of that just now, but you don't need to be a genius to work that out, which essentially means you have to toe the party line and vote in favour of legislation that you may well, morally believe is wrong.
Yeah, and you'd have to do that. And if you stepped outside of that, then you will potentially be kicked out of that party, which probably means that, you might survive until the next general election. There may be a by-election that would be called, but
chances of getting voted in as an independent are rare. I mean, they have happened on single issues, candidates, but it's very rare.
It's very localised, isn't it? Yeah. It's only in specific areas for specific reasons that generally happens. To get to a point where there's a no-party system, that it would certainly make any campaigning more interesting. You'd be much more localised. You'd be much more looking at what your local style government is going to do for you, what your councillors are going to do for you, that sort of thing, and what your MP is going to do within your local area. Why am I going to vote for somebody if they're not a member of a main party? I'm only going to vote for them if they're saying things that I want to happen.
And then this is what you're alluding to is my next point, Steve, is obviously my model, this neo-politics, will only come about if we shift towards a more local form of governance.
Yeah.
And how I see that will come about is, again, might sound a bit utopian or idealistic, but is as this system begins to fail, and we're seeing more and more crises in terms of, you know, economics, the banking system, that the power of corporations will eventually diminish. And what we will see with that, scary to think of, is the unwinding of globalization.
Yeah, and if we can, if there's the unwinding of that, this neoliberalism that we're currently within, if that can be dismantled, you get back to a community spirit. You get back to people actually believing that they have some form of power within themselves.
And that's where my point about sovereign human beings, that's where people will feel empowered, and they will feel more inclined to think, well, yeah, we can rule ourselves, you know.
And you are hearing things where people are saying, yeah, but that's not in the best public interest at the moment, is it? You are hearing groups that are forming to say, again, whilst the internet is a double-edged sword, that's one of its positives, where you get these social movements that are kicking off and saying, no, this fundamentally, this is wrong, and we shouldn't be doing it this way. And it gains such a groundswell of opinion that actually legislation has to be brought in, or governments have to change their...
We've seen that with fracking, but of course here in the UK the government's still continuing this and handing out licences. Again, that does show the limitations of that.
Because the corporations want it.
Yeah, exactly.
And the corporations want it enough that they're saying, no, you'll push that through. If the corporations... Again, the corporations are growing, and that's their base model. You look at any corporation, if they haven't had growth, it doesn't matter what the earnings are. If they haven't had growth, their share price falls. Why? If they're earning billions, why does it matter whether they've grown or not? But that's the way, that's the capital market system that we've got. If it's not increasing in its size and value, we'll get rid of it then.
It's interesting you should talk about this aspect of how corporations operate, because looking at it, this is again to my perspective, looking at it from a more zoomed out esoteric view, or taking an esoteric view, the way in which corporations operate is completely out of balance or harmony with the forces of nature or existence. You know, you can't have exponential growth.
No.
In anything, eventually you have to have a phase of dying back.
Yes.
So I believe no matter how powerful these corporations may be, and we've seen the recent news of the potential merger between Bayer and Monsanto, which is just so scary, it doesn't even bear thinking about. But in spite of this monolithic quality of these corporations, I believe eventually they will collapse or destroy themselves or one another in the process of trying to buy one another out.
Yeah, and... Yeah, we've seen plenty of big corporations fail.
It's not an unknown thing.
Kodak.
Yeah.
Kodak used to be the only name that you... If you were talking about anything to do with photography, you talk about Kodak. Where are they now? You know, they completely missed the boat. And again, how could a big corporation like Kodak miss the boat on something as simple as moving to digital photography?
What were their execs thinking? Were they all mescalers?
They obviously weren't in the same room as everyone else.
I mean, how did they miss that?
So you look at a lot of the corporations are having issues where they're obviously making decisions that are not in the public interest and it's becoming noticed. So Volkswagen, there's no way that what happened with Volkswagen was just a couple of engineers.
No.
That has to have had some sign off much higher up in the corporation. And have they got their fingers badly burnt?
It's interesting you should mention that, because one of the ways in which I think corporations and this whole idea of power maintaining itself is when these things come out, it's just a few rogue, it's a rogue element, and it's lower down. It's never, you know, the CEOs.
Yeah, actually, it's endemic in our whole structure.
It's the whole, structure, exactly,
And unfortunately, that's corporations for you. And because the corporations drive the political landscape that we live within, really, we are, like you said earlier, we're a corporatocracy. So we are driven by the corporate world, and that's what drives the political leadership.
Well, the lobbyists, essentially, they're there on behalf of the corporations, and then the politicians, they're the ones, or should I say the civil service, that actually write the legislation that favours the corporations. I mean, that's a very simplistic way of putting it, but that's essentially, that's the sham of democracy, isn't it?
And so you've elected people that are there to represent you. Actually, they're there to represent their political party. That's what they're doing. And they end up actually really representing the big business that ensures that big business has all of the legislation skewed in its favour.
Absolutely. I remember seeing, I don't know if it was on Facebook, but someone proposed this, whereby politicians on their suits and clothing wear the logo sponsored by, you know, like F1 drivers.
Well, again, if you look at the politicians themselves, if you look at their pay structure, it's relatively modest. Most of us would say, whoa. But, it's relatively modest if you look at it from a corporate world point of view. But actually, is that their only income? No.
No.
And most of them have other jobs.
They're directors or they're professionals.
And why have they been given those? Why would they be given a directorship? Well, because they have influence. It's not morally right to do it that way. Yes, you could argue that what you do is you say, no, you can't do anything else. If you're going to be a member of parliament, that's it. And you get a better wage because of it. I think you'd have a lot of people not do it then.
Absolutely.
So maybe that's the way.
Yeah. I mean, just bring this back to the idea of neo-politics and corporations. I think that with the collapse or the diminishment of power of corporations, this will lead to a completely different society, in that we'll be forced to be locally based, self-sufficient. I'm not saying in a conspiracy way that there'll be some sort of collapse. They may well be. But what I am saying is that this will give us the opportunity to develop a more organic, localized form of politics.
And again, from a sustainability point of view, that's a more sustainable model. That works for a much longer time.
We mean in the truest sense of the word, because the word sustainable, when we talk about carbon credits and all the rest of it, is a whole load of nonsense. We're talking in the truest sense of the word.
In the truest sense, that's a model that works for a much longer period of time, because you're not looking at constantly looking at this exponential growth of a corporation.
No, you're looking at, you would even if you were, say, financing, if there was a fairer base monetary system, you would have, things would be funded for the public good. Not about whether it can make money or not.
And there's lots of things that aren't funded for the public good that really should be, and there's lots of things that are not for the public good that are funded.
Yeah, sure. Like war.
Well, yeah, and in
we all, actually come from our taxes.
Yes, and if you look at certainly the more recent wars, all of those have been political based. Other than let's go and find somebody's oil. Because that's an asset that we want.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I would add as a counter is with this idea of neo-politics, it is about things being on a small scale. Now, the transition to a mass urbanised society, which we have here in the south, in the UK and obviously in the north, different places, whether that is likely to happen. I mean, it'd be more feasible if there was some sort of die-off of people, being quite conspiratorial here. But you know what I mean, Steve? Is it possible to go to a localised form of governance in a mass society?
It might be more difficult to do that, just purely because, again, you've got the issue of a load of people within an urban environment. Although, again, if we're being realistic, there's lots and lots of green areas within urban environments.
Yeah, when you drive around Britain, as you and I do a lot, and on the motorway network, and you think, my God, it's a travesty that they've destroyed farming in this country. There's all this land.
Yeah. And in a lot of cases, there's all this land owned by a very few number of people.
Yes, yeah.
And in some cases, it's the state. Mm. And okay, you'd say, well, if it's state owned, why can't we use it? Mm. If you end up with a more local governance, then there's no reason why you couldn't end up doing that. Mm. So there are.
So what you're talking about, Steve, then it would have to entail, you know, this land that's kept owned by these elite individuals. I mean, obviously, that would be a barrier, because we need the land to grow the crops, to be self-sufficient. And if they're not prepared, which they're unlikely to give up that land, what we're talking about is only in a mass collapse.
Yeah.
Is this likely to become possible?
It is. You've got plenty. Well, there are other models out there. I mean, the one that springs to mind, which again is very difficult to achieve, would be what was proposed by Gene Roddenberry. Mm. With Star Trek, because actually what he talked about there was...
What's the basis of that model, just quickly?
And the real basis of that model is people have whatever they want, mm. but they have to produce, they have to work, they have to do things.
Positive incentive.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there's a it's certainly not communism, because there's not the... I'm equal, yes, but I'm more equal than you.
Yeah, sure.
It's really everyone was looked upon as equal, and everyone had a part to play, and everyone did their job. Mm. The problem is that we have a society where not everyone wants to play their part.
No.
So it's encouraging people to do that.
I would argue, though, that one of the big reasons why people say, you know, don't want to play their part is they make this reasonable assessment that the system is rigged.
Yes.
So they think, actually, I will just turn to criminality, or I will just opt out.
Yes. And you can see that if you could offer them an alternative that gave them some positive feedback, some reason to feel to do it. I mean,
it's about empowerment as well. Isn't it?
A good example today, it's a daft one, but I dug two ditches today. Mm. Only it's to move an electrical cable.
Is that for the mass die-off?
No, I haven't buried anyone in it. But they're not big. Wasn't difficult. It wasn't a massive amount of work. But once I'd done it, and I looked back at what I'd done, and I felt good about it. Mm. And there are people out there that if you give them that opportunity to do something, and you give them positive feedback, and you say, well, that's really well done. Mm. There are people out there that go, well, actually, that was better than I thought it would be.
But it's almost the system is predicated on something completely different.
Because we've got a whole monetary-based system that's driving people to, like I said before, go to work, to pay your taxes, to keep the corporation fed.
To be debt slaves, essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
And so people opt out of being in that rigged system.
Mm.
And you almost say, well, who's the fool?
Mm. Absolutely. I'm just moving on. Steve, at this point, I just want to bring to the listeners' attention another perspective I've got about how we may bring about a new form of politics or neo-politics. Is, as we know, Steve, and we like to cover this on Discerning Consciousness, we're aware that there is a shift in human consciousness. People are becoming more aware. The desire for self-realisation and authenticity, can't get my words out today, has never been stronger.
Yeah.
And this is primarily embodied among the younger generation. As you all know, you've got two boys yourself. Well, one boy and one older boy. And they're far less respectful of existing power structures, you know. And they have a natural aversion to, you know, power being imposed or things that they feel are not right. They will not kowtow so much.
Yeah, I mean, the considering the amount of... the proper word is propaganda.
Mm.
That is fed to them on a very, very regular basis from a very early age onwards.
Mm.
Again, you'd have to say that this double-edged sword of the internet has given people the opportunity to communicate in a way that was never available before.
And in a way I think we've spoken about before, in a way that the powers that be, or the powers that were, as we like to call them, didn't quite... allow for, or didn't...
Don't think they anticipated that.
Didn't anticipate.
They're a bit of a Kodak moment, wasn't it?
It was.
Didn't see it coming.
A mass Kodak moment. Yeah.
So they did not. They just... And they've wrestled, they've fought, they've really tried to bring it to heel.
Mm.
And they cannot seem to
do it.
They
can't.
It doesn't matter how they try, they can't.
As we discussed in the Cashless Society episode.
They just can't seem to grab enough of it to make it their own system.
Mm. Just to develop this idea just a little bit more as we get towards the end of this episode of how the younger generation coming through who are more consciousness may bring about a new kind of political structure. So as the older generation die off, hopefully, it's a bit utopian again, the younger generation will take up positions of power in terms of management within corporations. And one would hope they bring a greater level of awareness and consciousness to these positions. So that's one way in which we may see a change in the corporate world, and obviously they will enter politics as well, younger people, and a new attitude, a new consciousness. Do you think, you know, this is a fanciful idea, or
there's dangers to it, isn't there? Because again, with the corporations, we know the corporations are driven by major shareholders.
Yeah.
And how do you break that
grip
on them?
Yeah.
And maybe you will find that there are the younger generation of those major shareholders who have a more more awareness, that are more moral, that are more of the belief that they should be doing the right thing more of the time.
I mean, some people might say, well, we just see this demonstrated in, you know, youngsters being more arrogant. I'll say, well, yeah, there is that. But I think they're a lot more, say, to when, you know, our generation, when we were younger, they're just a lot more clued in. So they may watch, you know, crappy TV or rubbish on YouTube, but they know it's rubbish.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They almost know. It's like, well, I know that's rubbish, but actually in myself, I have my own resources. I have a sense of empowerment, but I just watch this for a bit of entertainment.
Yeah,
you know?
and you have to be clear on, there's a subtle difference between watching something because you find it amusing and entertaining and watching it because you genuinely believe that that's how the world is.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of people that I think you're right. They do. They're much more aware, and it's only when you talk to them one-to-one that you realise that actually there's things that they do know, that they are more aware of, that they do care about things in a better, or certainly different way, and they're not all hooked and sold on the rubbish that we see on the televisions and in the cinemas.
Mm, mm, yeah, absolutely.
As entertaining as it can be at times, because I'm different.
Well, we're all susceptible to a good film. You know, they have a lot to reveal. So yeah, just rounding up this episode, we'd really like your input. I mean, how do you feel about this idea of a new system of politics, neo-politics? Do you think I'm being a bit idealistic? And, you know, Steve's brought the balance. But I mean, I'd be interested, our listeners to see what you all have to think on that. Because I think it's certainly a pertinent issue at this time, isn't it?
We
can't carry on as we are.
And it's not just in the US that there's a pertinent issue. I think worldwide, if you look at, there's a lot of political upheaval in a number of countries. And at the end of it all, you've got to hope that we get a larger scale Iceland, I think.
Yes.
That's what I'd like to see.
I think that's what we need to aim for. Yeah, so with that in mind, please contact us with any ideas or any response to this episode on our Discerning Consciousness Facebook page. We look forward to receiving any input you might have. So we're signing off for this episode, and we look forward to the next one.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thank you.
to blame it on Islam. We turn the power to the half-nots. Then came the shot. What you reap is what you sow!